Good morning, everyone. It's a little bit past 10 o'clock, and it's Thursday, April 23rd. I want to thank everyone that's in the audience right now. I appreciate you being here. And before we go any further, if you all rise, and let's do the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Thank you very much. So we have a quorum. All five members of the board are here today. I think Director Scott wants to say something.
Yes, there's an echo.
Is your microphone on? One moment, please.
Thank you so much.
That's all right, no problem. Okay, before we go any further with regard to addressing regular business, I have one comment from a member of the audience on this particular agenda item, and we also have some written comments, which I'm not necessarily going to read at this time. So Mr. Jim Townsend, if you'd come to the microphone, please.
Good morning. I'm Jim Townsend, and I live here in Cambria there. I just wanted to comment briefly on the noticing of this particular meeting and how that sort of rolls into what certainly appears to be the practice of this board and staff of doing pretty much everything they can to limit public involvement in the public's business of running the CCSD. I received the notice of the special meeting with the agenda yesterday.
Recording in progress.
Yesterday at 9:57, which made it legal, but it certainly did not make it useful for any members of the public that wanted to try to rearrange their schedule to make it to this meeting, which I think there's some important stuff that's gonna be addressed. And I would contrast that to the way the, like last Saturday's emergency evacuation forum was handled, where there was wonderful public notice months in advance, weeks in advance, and it was well attended, and I thought a very successful and useful event. I didn't see anything in the packet that was so time sensitive that it required a special meeting to address these issues, and someone who had, kind of a bent to think that way might think that this was done purposely to reduce public involvement and public attendance at this meeting. I know those dog park people can be pretty pesky sometimes, and the same things with the ranch folks when they're not out weeding all the time. But they really have a right to be involved in these processes and to be noticed properly for these meetings. Over the last several years, every action the board has taken regarding public involvement has been to reduce it, whether they're no longer reading public comments allowed at the meetings. You have reduced the number of board meetings by half, and recently you've reduced the number of standing committee meetings to quarterly. And these all appear to point to a focus of this board to really reduce public involvement rather than encourage public involvement. And I think that's really unfortunate, especially when we have some really important items such as are on the agenda today. I think it's probably right to assume that we don't have enough money to do all the things we want to do, but I do think that that should be something that is handled by the community and not just by the board on these quickly noticed and not very public-friendly meetings. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Townsend. Anybody else in the audience would like to get up and speak on this item? Not seeing anyone speaking, wanting to speak. Pardon me. Oh, I'm sorry, thank you. Anyone on Zoom wishes to speak, Ms. Dodson?
Yes, Elizabeth Benhausen, followed by Tina Dick.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Benhausen.
I urge you to suspend any action or not take any action on this agenda item for all the reasons that Mr. Townsend just wonderfully elaborated. I think that it would be totally premature to take such major fiscal responsibility action. It would limit your authority as a board dramatically under the guise of a board action. I think that it would be marvelous if you would let the public read these documents for at least a week. In other words, I was at your last meeting in which you discussed whether to have a special meeting or postpone this to make the May meeting longer. And of course you chose the special meeting. And of course it is premature. And I repeat, it mitigates your authority as a board very seriously. So please do not take any action on this item today and postpone it until you have had a chance to make sure that the public has responded in diligence in written form and responded in diligence in oral form as the case merits. So please postpone this deliberation today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Benhausen. Ms. Dickerson?
Thank you, President Farmer. I have serious concerns about this item being shared with just about 24 hours notice yesterday on such a significant agenda item. I don't even know if the board even has had a chance to read the LAFCO report from 2024, by the way, some of which is not pertinent to 2026. I did send an email before the meeting began urging or requesting the board to delay and certainly not to vote on any resolution. I don't think the board understands what may be involved with the divestiture process by eliminating Parks and Rec from their mission statement. All of that has to be fully understood, and there's no way with a 24-hour notice on this agenda item that any of us can really be fully apprised of what's involved here. And I really resent that, again, the public has been malaligned in this short notice for something of this magnitude. So I would urge the board to consider delaying this for some time and having a public workshop as we deserve. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dickerson. Ms. Dodson has informed me that there are people in the audience who would like to address this issue. So anyone that's out there?
Craig Brooks, followed by Tyler Loudermilk.
All right, thank you.
Hi, board staff. How's it going?
Good morning.
I'm Craig Brooks, one of your fire captains and vice president of the fire union. So I just want to start by saying I've been paying close attention over the past few years, and I really do appreciate what this board and staff have done to move the fire department in the right direction. Going to full-time firefighters, replacing aging apparatus with a new engine, and bringing in safer funding. To name a few, those are huge decisions, and they've made a real difference for our department and for this community. We are very supportive of the direction you've taken, especially considering where the department has been in the past. Looking at the history, and I've spent a lot of time doing that, because I want to know where we've been, where we are, and where we're going with our department. What that really comes down to is the fire department hasn't always been prioritized in the way it should have been. Funding that should have gone towards staffing, equipment, and response was directed to other projects, not with this board, with past boards. Some of the projects are valuable, we agree, but that's not what matters when somebody calls 911. And over time, that has consequences. You see it in staffing levels and workload and how thin everything gets. Right now, our chief and captains are stretched. We're still operating without positions that were cut years ago, like a deputy chief, fire marshal, and administrative support. And that workload hasn't gone away, it's grown. Inspections, prevention, administrative responsibilities, they're all still there. They're just being handled by the same small group of people that are responsible for emergency response. This is not a sustainable model long-term. On top of that, advanced life support is a real concern. We currently have four paramedics on the floor. That is a fragile system. And for a lot of the community, the difference between an EMT and a paramedic isn't always clear, but it matters a great deal. Paramedics provide a much higher level of care, especially in serious medical emergencies that we see frequently in Cambria. We're also seeing longer wait times tied to our county EMS system. Our ambulances cover a larger area and are frequently pulled out of Cambria. As a result, we're seeing on-scene wait times for transport reach up to 45 minutes on multiple calls this year. Having a paramedic on duty and maintaining service levels is essential for our community members when these incidents occur. At the end of the day, this isn't just about operations. It's about making sure the district isn't exposed to unnecessary risk by underfunding its core emergency services. This resolution isn't about saying no to other projects. It's about making sure the order is right. Core services like staffing, emergency response, and ALS have to come first, then everything else comes after that. Because if it's not written into policy, it becomes easy to drift back, especially when budgets get tight and priorities shift. You've already made the decisions to move things forward, but we are still not where we need to be operationally. This is just putting something in place to make sure that direction holds long-term, not just right now. I spent 8 years with Cal Fire and have been deployed.
Mr. Brooks, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you've gone over your 3 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I do a little bit more?
Sure, go ahead.
I'll be done in like 20. I've spent 8 years with Cal Fire and have been deployed across the state on large-scale incidents and was recently deployed to the Palisades in Malibu with our department. We've been fortunate here, and we haven't had a major wildfire, earthquake, or large-scale event hit this community. But from what I've experienced, those things don't happen until they do. And when that day comes, this is the system we're relying on. Our local union strongly supports adopting this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have a written request, but I believe someone else wanted to speak in public comment.
Good morning, board members. My name is Tyler Loudermilk, interim fire captain, Cambria Fire Department, Cambria Professional Firefighters, Local 4635. We've talked a lot this morning about staffing and funding, but behind that is the reality of the people doing the job and what this work does to them over time. Firefighting isn't just hard in the moment, it adds up. Over a career, it takes a toll. Higher rates of injury, cardiovascular strain, cancer risk, that's just the nature of the job. What matters is how we plan for that. Right now, we don't have a structured health and wellness program in place. Things like injury prevention, fitness support, recovery, and long-term health monitoring. A lot of departments have already moved in that direction because it works. Without it, injuries last longer, people spend more time off shift, and it puts pressure on the rest of the crew. In a small department like ours, there's no cushion for that. We've already felt it. We've had early retirements from injury and multiple people out on extended leave at different times. When that happens here, it impacts staffing immediately. So this just isn't about personnel. It's about keeping the system running. Healthy firefighters are what keep this department operational. If we're constantly backfilling injuries or dealing with turnover, we're already trying to catch up instead of staying ahead. This resolution matters because it protects the funding that supports not just staffing, but the long-term sustainability of that staffing, keeping people healthy, on shift, and in this department. At the end of the day, taking care of firefighters is directly tied to taking care of this community. We support this resolution because it protects the foundation that everything else depends on. Thank you.
Thank you. I have another request for, have another request to speak from Ms. Galloway.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I
just wanted to thank you guys for having this conversation. I think it's a hard conversation to have. It's an unpopular one. I think it's probably why no previous board has had it. I think that the reality is we're in a zero growth community with a limited general fund, and these adult conversations are the conversations that need to be had. I appreciate you putting this forward and putting our finances and public safety, hopefully putting that ahead of what some people might enjoy, but that might not be the core of why this district is here, and keeping residents safe in their community. I think that although I've heard that there's, why can't we have parks like every other community, I think that if you really look at the data, every other community doesn't have a bunch of parks. Los Osos has 15,000 people, they have one park. And so I think that we're doing a pretty decent job here in Cambria. I think that prioritizing the use of our general fund funds is a very important adult thing to do. And I really appreciate you guys being adults here today and having that conversation, so thank you.
Thank you.
President Farmer, we have another person via Zoom.
All right, thank you, Ms. Dodson. Let's go right ahead.
Crosby and Laura Swartz.
Yes, good morning, board and all there. This is Laura from Cambria. Question. My mind, if I remember correctly, and this comes from a little different direction, we've been up there for a very long time. And when the EWS was being created and all the turmoil around it, if I remember correctly, and let me go back to say that I really understand the enterprise funds, you know, the water and the wastewater and the general fund. I realize how all that stuff is separate and how it works. My memory, and if you could go back and check, it seems like there was a very large loan made to the EWS from the general fund. And I'm not sure that was ever repaid. Now, I could be totally wrong, but we've been in town there before most of the board was even in town. So if you could check into that, because I think that would solve some of the problem. If you would see if the EWS owes the general fund quite a bit of money, it was something like $2 million. So if I'm totally wrong, I apologize. But if someone could go back and check into that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's move. So anyone else wish to speak on Zoom?
No.
All right, thank you, Ms. Dodson. So let's move on to... Director Scott, thank you.
Yes, would it be okay for our general manager to respond to the question? Because that's a huge question about a loan that... Yeah, so could you speak to that, please?
Thank you, Director Scott. To my knowledge, there is no loan that was given from the general fund to support the water reclamation facility. There have in the past been interfund loans from the general fund to water and wastewater. When I was hired in 2023, I think we made one of the last payments on that. So there's no debt remaining owed to the general fund from the enterprise funds.
Oh, thank you, Director Scott, for addressing that issue. All right, so let's move on to agenda item 3A. And General Manager McElhaney, if you would introduce this item, please.
Thank you, President Farmer. Agenda item 3A, receive a presentation from the San Luis Obispo Local Agency Formation Commission, known as LAFCO, Executive Director Rob Fitzroy. Why we're here and why we're having this presentation, LAFCO exists as our state-mandated oversight body responsible for coordinating and evaluating how local governments, like ours, provide services, how those services are structured, and whether they are sustainable over time. The issue identified in our municipal service review that we heard in public comment, which has come before this board several times, is not simply a deficit, but more accurately described as a policy-driven funding gap. Not necessarily a policy-driven funding gap that was created by this board or management staff. Yet over time, the district has made policy decisions, again, not this current board, often in response to community expectations to provide services without securing sustainable funding to support them. These decisions, again, were made historically and are not attributed to our current board or management. But this brings us to our core risk. It's a risk to our essential services. These include fire protection and our existing unfunded commitments for ongoing maintenance of public-facing infrastructure, such as the Fiscalini Ranch, approximately 198 district-owned vacant parcels, our Veterans Memorial Hall, what started as two restrooms, which is now three, and with the skate park would then make four. The risk is clear from a staff-level perspective and from our MSR that this represents a structural imbalance that if left unaddressed, will force the district to reduce service levels, defer maintenance, or reallocate resources away from our core health and safety services. With that introduction, I'll turn it over to Mr. Rob Fitzroy.
Mr. Fitzroy, good morning. Thank you for being here in person.
Absolutely. Rob Fitzroy, Executive Officer for LAFCO. Yes, thank you for having me and glad to be here. So today we will just sort of briefly get into a little bit of a recap of the municipal service review, much of which you're already aware of, but for context, we'll get into that a little bit, and then just talk about general implications and best practices that we see amongst governance. So before we get into the MSR, to familiarize everyone with LAFCO and what we do, so we are considered an independent agency. We operate under state law, though we are local to San Luis Obispo County. So our jurisdiction is limited to SLO. There is a LAFCO in every state, in every county across the state. It's a requirement under state law. So our purpose is to facilitate collaborative and efficient government services for agencies within our county. We seek to provide ensure that agencies are providing efficient services, fostering orderly growth and development. So often you hear about LAFCO in context to annexations, so jurisdictions getting bigger. We want to ensure that we have orderly and logical growth within our county, that it's efficient. We have a significant mandate to conserve agriculture and open space as well, in conjunction with growth. We serve 53 agencies in our county currently, so we have all seven cities, the 35 special districts and 11 dependent districts. And some of the other things that we're responsible for are changes in governmental organization, so changes of powers for a CSD, for example, dissolutions of government agencies altogether, divestitures, things of that nature. Annexations is what we're probably most commonly associated with, as I mentioned. We also establish spheres of influence, which are probable growth areas of agencies. And we also are the entity involved with incorporations. So if a community, a district, or an unincorporated community wish to become a city, we're the agency that would take you through that process. So next slide. So a little bit more about MSRs and why they exist. LAFCO is required to prepare them.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. If you could address MSR fully as to what it means?
Absolutely, yeah, I'm sorry about that. An MSR is a municipal service review. It's something that we are required under state law to prepare. We also, in conjunction with the service review, evaluate the sphere of influence. So Cambria CSD has a sphere of influence, which are areas in which it may grow and expand its boundaries into the future. A sphere is not a boundary necessarily. It's just an area that it may extend into at some point in the future. We prepared the district's MSR in 2024. We do them about every 5 years. So while 2024 might seem like forever ago, we'll be preparing another one in a few years. And when we prepare it, it's a single point in time, it's a snapshot in time. So we prepare it with the most readily and recent available data at that point in time. So it may, there may be a lag time, for example, with regard to audits. So there's always a lag time with year-end closeouts and things like that. So we use the most available data. And we'll do the next one in about 3 years from now. Next slide.
All right, thank you.
So the Municipal Service Review, or MSR, itself is a comprehensive study of the level, the range, and performance of government services provided by a given entity. We have to look at, under state law, 7 specific factors. Additionally, as I mentioned, the sphere of influence study, those go hand in hand. That sphere of influence is best defined as a 20-year long-range planning tool that indicates potential future expansion. It's not a given. It may happen at some point. It may not also. Similarly, these are also, the sphere studies are also be required to be updated every 5 years. All right, next slide. You can go ahead and go to the next one. So as I mentioned, we have to look at very specific factors. Today, we're just going to touch 2 key factors that really get to the heart of why you're all here today and the purpose of the conversation today. That's adequacy of public services, item 3 here, and financial ability to provide services. That's number 4. Next slide. I'm just going to very, very briefly just cut straight to the chase of what the MSR determined for the purposes of brevity. LAFCO determined with regard to water and wastewater, in reviewing all the available information and working with your director and staff, that the district absolutely has the capability and to adequately meet the existing needs and future water and wastewater needs of the community, as these primarily operate as enterprise funds. The next factor relates to, The next factor relates to fire protection. LAFCO determined that the district has the capability and capacity and does a great job serving its current community and existing demand. However, to continue providing that same level of service and into the future, the district should identify a stable source of funding into the future, particularly as the SAFER grant expires. And just in general, with what we see throughout the state, that costs continuously rise, particularly amongst the within fire protection services. There's maintenance costs associated with apparatus, things of that nature, staffing, all the things that come with it. It generally just goes upward. So planning ahead for that is what you should strive for. Getting into the next slide. In terms of parks, rec, and open space, that's quite wordy. It's probably hard to see. I'll just briefly touch on each one. As we all know, the CCSD owns and operates and maintains a number of community assets. Vets Hall, Dog Park, Fiscalini Preserve. An ongoing challenge is maintenance of those facilities. In this particular instance, because all of the parks and rec services, as well as a significant portion of your fire services, are provided all by general fund. We looked at the ongoing maintenance costs associated with that, and we determined at that time that as the CCSD continues to maintain all of those assets and take ownership of more assets, it should consider doing so in conjunction with a funding source. Because as it currently is showing, the trend is that there's going to be a continuous decline in funding for those, which will create some sort of funding gap into the future, likely will create some sort of funding gap into the future. Next slide. So overall, in the MSR, it was determined that the district has the capability and the capacity to provide park services. However, the district should identify a sustainable level of service that it wishes to achieve and identify some funding streams associated with that. This next slide, at a very high level, just really shows it gross revenues and expenditures overall of the district. Red is bad, green is good. The general fund is the first table you see here. This does go back to fiscal year 21-22, again, because at the time of preparation of the municipal service review, that was the latest audited data that was available. So we did see a trend there. And then moving into the enterprise fund, we see a sort of a reverse trend. Earlier years, 17-18, and then it sort of turned itself around in the most recent years. Again, none of this I'm sure comes as a surprise, but that's the data that we use to evaluate. Moving on to the next slide. Overall, we determined in terms of overall net position, that's decreased by about 12% over those audited 5 years. Expenditures have exceeded revenues within the general fund primarily as it relates to increased operational costs. The district absolutely is financially stable despite rising increase in costs. These are things just that it's our job and of course the district's job to acknowledge these trends and to develop its own decision making and policies to address those. So what does all this mean? Like with any agency across the state, whether you're a special district, a city, a county, funds are limited. Without an increase in revenue streams, decisions do need to be made to prioritize and operate within your fiscal limitations. Any agency should generally avoid incurring new responsibilities, particularly when there are some shortfalls identified. So any agency should avoid incurring new responsibilities, liabilities, other financial commitments without an identified revenue stream associated with that. Inversely, an agency should really expand its responsibilities once it has secured those new revenue streams. So next slide. There we go. Okay, so moving on. So sort of recapping what all that means and what some of those things are in terms of best practices. The next point is in regard to discretionary spending in general. So spending property tax dollars that are allocated to the district by the county is completely at the district's discretion. The district should, of course, consider community needs and input as well as its fiduciary responsibilities to be good stewards of public funds. And it is a very common practice that agencies establish criteria or policies or budget policies that help guide decision-making into the future and the wisest and best use of those public funds. So very common that you see that in cities. The County of San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors has a very thorough budget policies, and they revisit those each year prior to going to their budget cycle. So at the end of the day, the district needs to consider whether critical services such as fire protection and how those are ranked amongst its other responsibilities. It's a juggling act, but all of that goes to that overarching, what are the overarching question of what are the district's goals and priorities. And when you establish those goals and priorities, that really helps as you move forward in those decisions. Next slide. Commonly, and I know you are all aware of this, the fiscal projection. So another very common practice is to conduct fiscal projections. So as we noted, fire costs continuously increase, as do other costs, parks and rec services, water, you name it. Things just generally get more expensive. And that leads to increased need for revenue. So you want to look into the future, project out what your expected costs would be, where your revenue streams might be, what the shortfalls are, and some solutions associated with that to close those gaps. Sometimes it's increasing revenue, but not always. That's hard to do. Sometimes it's cutting back services, which is also hard to do in other ways because that has a direct impact to your community. So next slide. In terms of that, raising more revenue, typically that comes in the form of a new fee. Increasing fees or special taxes is often very difficult, as I'm sure you all know. It's generally not something that communities in general tend to be happy with, because that means more money out of every individual's pocket. But that has to be balanced with what the community needs and wants also. So if the community has a very strong desire for parks and rec services, getting some of those things done on your project lists, it's important to get that input from the community and that the community understand what that means, is that there is limited funding, and then gauge whether the community would support a fee. So if the community is has a strong passion and desire to see more parks, more help build new things, a key question is, would they support a certain fee annually, $50, $100, whatever it may be, whatever the need is on the ballot. And the way that you could get there is, gauging community support early on, polling, things of that nature, before you jump straight to increasing fees. Again, it's always a challenge. It's understandable, but that's one reality that's one revenue stream that is just a reality. If you need more, that's the most common way to get there. And sort of next slide. And the inverse of that is to shed responsibility. So if you can't increase your revenue streams, shedding some responsibility so that you can operate within your limitations. There's a few ways to do that. So we all know the district has a number of powers that are activated: water, fire, wastewater, et cetera, parks and rec. And this isn't to say that you get rid of altogether some of your powers. It's just to say that shedding some responsibility perhaps within those powers. So some of your maintenance responsibilities, offloading some of your assets, things of that nature, if you need to cut back at some point in the future. And sort of the last way to shed responsibility is sort of it was noted, the divestiture of a power. So you have your activated powers. You can always go all the way to divestiture power. That's something that is at the discretion of the commission, the board of directors to decide. That's sort of a worst case scenario, but it is a tool that exists if funding or it becomes too challenging to continue to serve, provide a certain particular service into the future. That is something that is always available. That is a LAFCO proceeding, so the district board of directors would need to generally support that. And then the way in which it's divested is going through formal LAFCO proceedings. I did hear in public comment about divestiture. That's quite a significant process. That's its own independent effort, and so that's not why we're here today, and that's not what this is about. This is just reporting out what the MSR found. The last slide, just to recap all of that. The MSR identified, two areas of concern, as I noted, the fire protection and parks protection, particularly because there's a competing interest there in terms of revenue, property tax revenue allocation. And overall, that the district should not assume new responsibilities without commensurate resources, funding sources. And ultimately, that it is the district's discretion to prioritize and spend that property tax between parks and rec and fire. And those funding shortfalls do indicate a need to either reduce service or increase your funding streams into the future. And overall, like I noted before, it's always best to establish policies. It's a very common practice, and it's a great decision-making guide into the future by doing that. It sets the course for the future, and it establishes clear expectations to the community as to how the board will allocate its funding. So that concludes my presentation, and I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzroy. Any members of the board wish to ask Mr. Fitzroy any questions about his presentation? Director Thomas.
Thank you, President Farmer, and thank you, Mr. Fitzroy. Excellent discussion. And a couple questions. In terms of the property tax allocations that the CCSD receives, what percentage of the overall property taxes that are levied on properties, you know, on parcels within the CCSD boundary, what percentage comes to the CCSD? What percentage goes to the county? And how are those sorted? How are those determined? And what would the process be for the CCSD to perhaps increase that percentage?
In terms of what the allocation is currently, I would need to coordinate with the county tax collector's office to understand the precise percentage. It's incredibly detailed, and so I won't be able to give you that exact number right now. But yes, there's a portion that's distributed to the district. We can get that to your director and share that information. Again, we'll be able to provide that off the top of my head. The question about property tax and increasing property tax, the way in which you would go about that is in conversation with the county. The county is, Board of Supervisors is ultimately the decision maker on that. That is an increasingly difficult proposition. Just to speak frankly, the county is also facing a deficit currently. Funding is tight, though their budget is significant. They have significant expenses associated with their operations as well. So it's not something that is often discussed because it's very, very difficult to achieve.
Director Gray.
Yeah, thank you, President Farmer. And thank you, Mr. Fitzroy, for that excellent presentation. It was very informative. I had two questions. I maybe you could take them. I'll give you the first one first because it might be complicated. What would be the, you know, any opportunity, what would be the feasibility of some structural solution? And I'm thinking of the an independent or formation of a special district for parks and recreation in this region, maybe not just Cambria, but the whole North Coast. I ask that because I lived in an unincorporated community for almost 20 years in Ventura County, where our parks and rec function was carried out by a district, not a county district and not a city and not a, but it's also not that, wasn't the utilities district, it was a special district for parks and rec. It was close in Simi Valley, actually. And I think it was pre-Prop 13, which, you know, I asked that question, but is it possible to set up something like that in this region, maybe in the same boundaries, say, as North Coast Advisory Committee, Advisory Council has, and so forth, with either a carve-out of taxes from the county or maybe a vote with a new parcel tax? I talked about the county carve-out because the county does provide parks and rec here, of course. They have Samuel Park, and in fact, they're the only active parks and rec activity, agency right now in Cambria. Expand that concept and make something like it'll be locally run by an elected board, but also locally funded. Is that even feasible in this climate?
Feasibility is, I will say technically it's feasible. There's a legal process. There's a LAFCO proceeding in which you could go about that. It requires a certain level of community support. So you would first need to start by petitioning, and if there was enough support in the community, 10% is typically the threshold of registered voters and or landowners to form a new district to accomplish that goal. That's technically feasible. Mm-hmm. The community in terms of climate and temperature were around community support for that remain, that's something that would just need to be put in front of folks to see if there is that level of support. But technically, yeah, something like that's possible. There would need to be an associated revenue stream associated with that prior to approval. And the way that that's typically done is if there is a proposal to form a district, it's commensurate and conditioned in a way that the district would be formed if, for example, a Prop 218 fee is passed after approval, and then it becomes effective. And so technically, there's an avenue, a way to get there. But the big question is level of community support.
Right. And that actually is my question, is kind of a follow-up question, because you mentioned fees. You talked about fees in the presentation and not, say, parcel taxes, which is, you know, what we think about generally when we think about raising revenue. And I noticed, I've done a little research on this with other areas, there is a park fee that is charged to new development. Templeton has one, I think, of a little under $7,000. That sounds like that would be feasible to put on our fee schedule, for instance, when we update it, possibly. And also, though, I wonder about taxes. You know, when you talk about revenue, added revenue source for a new district, you mentioned a Prop 218 fee, but is that different from, say, just a special tax that has to get approved by two-thirds of the voters, or is it something else?
Yeah, I would defer to your legal counsel on the particulars of those different types of fees and the legal requirements behind that. You're right, the special taxes do require there's a higher approval threshold. Prop 218 fees are a little bit different. It's more of a protest proceeding,
right,
where if a certain number of people oppose it, and that's typically with an existing established use. And so in context to what we were talking about here is for purposes of the presentation, with regard to parks and rec services, if there was a desire of the community to pay some sort of parcel tax or fee to provide additional revenue into the future.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Any other board members wish to question Mr. Fitzroy? Yes, Director Thomas, once again.
Thank you, President Farmer, and thank you, Director Gray. Great questions, and it's me thinking. You know, I've read that voter-led initiatives have, in some cases, the courts have ruled that they require only a simple majority rather than a two-thirds majority. And and you seem somewhat knowledgeable about these things, so I just thought I would ask if that's something that you have seen and have any experience with.
And just for clarifying purposes, you're about the formation of new districts and the threshold associated with that, or?
No, I didn't mean the formation of a new district, but rather a voter-led initiative that would be something on the nature of establish a benefit assessment, or I'm not sure the right words to put on it, but some fee that would be collected through the property tax process that would be directed to the CCSD for Parks and Rec, similar to the successful fire department assessment that was established roughly three decades ago and has been made permanent. If that were a voter-led initiative, I gather that's
I think just to answer that very briefly, yes, that's also an option. You know, there's one that could be led by the board of directors. There's absolutely voter initiative as well.
And I'll follow up with that, Director Thomas. We did talk about this at the Fire Protection Committee because a parcel tax for fire service was discussed. Citizens Initiative can be started with approximately 10% of our registered voters, with a majority threshold, not two-thirds. However, there is a measure that's going to be on the ballot in November that would eliminate that option for citizens' initiatives. So if we were to look at that, and I'd have to double check with council, but that would have to move pretty quickly just in case this citizens' initiative is struck down.
It appears Director Scott would also like to say something.
Yes, I have a question. Thank you, President Farmer. My question is for you, our general manager, and that is, why did we do a resolution rather than create an ad hoc to address the ongoing cost of Parks and Rec?
Thank you, Director Scott. Essentially, some of the discussions that have been had at the board level over the last several months with several of what I would say are competing unfunded projects that are going to be coming before the board sooner than later. The resolution is essentially a stopgap that identifies the path forward that we want to move as a board. And I think, you know, through those discussions, staff has identified what I interpret at least a majority of the board that is aligned with that. So this resolution allows a stopgap for us to then bring forward an ad hoc and discuss some of the policies that Mr. Fitzroy was talking about. And after speaking with Mr. Carmel, our district really has never had that type of budgeting policy in terms of where our priorities are as a district. And we will be seeing a lot of these parks projects come before the board. And there are some public pressure and wants and needs in terms of district spending. And so we essentially wanted to highlight where we are as a district. And the MSR has highlighted that. We obviously know about some of the expenditures within the general fund in terms of purchasing that engine, which we won't see reimbursement for, you know, quite a few years. And then that'll be followed up with another large capital purchase that would be brought before the board to replace the backup engine. Additionally, we have two engines that are getting really old and still have to make it another 2 or 3 years. So, you know, essentially we wanted to bring this before the board as a stopgap measure to identify where the board and the district would like to head in terms of our priorities while eventually working with the board on these budgetary policies.
Thank you both. Mr. Fitzroy, I'd like to make a comment here. I've lived here for almost 40 years, and while I haven't heard what I'm about to say recently, I recall when I first moved here and a number of community members expressed concern about the fact that because we have a large amount of tourism here, including the motels, that the county got a lot of tax money from how Cambria functions because of the tourism, and yet we don't get those monies back to, let's say, supplement the services that we need to provide. How do you feel about that?
I think those decisions and the allocation and the property tax all preceded me in those, so I really can't say or opine on that. That was a Board of Supervisors decision to at some point in time, and so you know, that's something that could be evaluated, studied in some fiscal analysis, absolutely, to better understand impacts of that tourism relative to the district, relative to the amount of money that's generated. But I also don't have information right in front of me to really speak to it or look to any indicator, so I don't want to speak one way or the other about that particular issue, but certainly understand the district's perspective on that matter.
And I'll follow up, President Farmer. We've had these discussions from a staff level with Supervisor Gibson. Our fire chief met with Supervisor Gibson. And I'll let just district council chime in and solidify it. The county holds really tight to those tourism dollars, and I've been given no indication that they will lighten that grip and adjust any of our revenues. As Mr. Fitzroy noted, the county's in a deficit. The county struggles maintaining their own parks. We've had the conversations about how, you know, the district could increase revenues from the county, but those discussions have not been very fruitful. And Mr. Carmel, if you can follow up.
Candidly, there's not much more to say. The county's facing budget issues as well, and those funds are very limited. Their tourism dollars are precious to them, and of course, we could probably do some studies to quantify the impacts on the district and make a plea based on the facts. That certainly would help. But it's not as if we haven't approached the county numerous times since I've been here for 18 years. And the answer is normally no, although we have been allocated revenues by the tourism board for specific projects. I think generally speaking, it's a negotiation that won't go very far.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Carmel. So right now, yes. Director Gray, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, President Farmer. I just had a further question. You, President Farmer, I think you kind of raised the issue indirectly. When we talk about the county revenue from our local economy, our local tax base. It does bring the issue of another big function of LAFCO, which is dealing with incorporations. And I heard talk all, you know, forever about how the county will hold on to its every last cent of tax revenue for dear life, and you can never, you know, get an even break from them if we decide to incorporate. But I want to know what LAFCO's mandate is, or their guidelines are from state law as to how they are supposed to basically find an equitable solution if, say, Cambria wants to incorporate and the county basically makes its own demands. Isn't LAFCO sort of obligated to find an equitable solution rather than just simply giving the county everything it wants, to put it bluntly?
Sure. We are not in the position to give the county whatever it wants. We have nothing to do with what the county gets or property tax allocation. Yeah. Property tax allocation is always a negotiation between the two affected agencies. LAFCO plays no role in that necessarily, but I will speak to incorporation in general and sort of the overarching guidance that comes with that. Incorporation is a very big deal. It's a very high bar, but the key indicator that is really, I guess, the overarching goal with any incorporation is revenue neutrality. So if you become a city, that means you are taking on all the things that a government does in any given city. So fire protection, police protection, you guys already do water and sewer, things like that. But there's other things that come with that. You become the land use authority, so you need to have a general plan, a planning department, you issue your own building permits, things like that. So you need to be able to demonstrate that you can generate enough revenue to support all that. And if you can, that's a huge hurdle in that test. Like I said, the bar is pretty high. The state has very clear guidance and rules about incorporation, what to look at, things to consider. And so if anything ever came to fruition with an incorporation, it's a big process. A lot of analysis is required. But to circle back to your question of that property tax allocation, so if you did incorporate, it would require a negotiation with the county mm-hmm. on that property tax. And often, the way that's looked at from the county perspective, because we often have this conversation, any annexation, just about any mm-hmm. anything that involves tax, we're involved with in some way or another. So we can speak to the county's perspective on that matter. And their perspective is if an agency or a district is offsetting or offloading some of their responsibilities, they can see that and they're willing to negotiate that proportionate amount. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you take all their police services, if you take their planning services and you take that on yourself, that all becomes part of the negotiation. So that's typically how that unfolds.
It just sounds like revenue neutrality is the cardinal rule in this process, right?
Generally speaking, yeah. That's the guiding principle.
Now, thank you very much.
Mr. Fitzroy, I appreciate the fact that you're able to answer pretty much all the questions that we've posed to you with as much expertise as possible, so thank you. And Vice President Dean.
I think Director Thomas had his hand up first.
Thank you, Director Thomas. President Dean. Just back on the subject of
bed tax, the transient occupancy tax, and the money that flows to the county. Just want to remind us all that a portion of that goes to the Cambria Tourism Board and the tourism board, and that's somewhere between 500 and 600 grand that they receive coming in and
per year,
annually. And a portion of that they issue as grants to entities in the community. And in fact, our general manager applied for and successfully attained one of those grants that has resulted in some of the benefits to, you know, to this facility. So that's it. I just wanted to point out that's not a hopeless source. That is, there is some benefit, and the Cambria Tourism Board takes that responsibility very seriously in terms of benefits to the community. So that is, so it's just wanted to make that point.
Thank you, Director Thomas. Yes, Vice President Dean.
Thank you, Director Thomas. That was pretty much what I was going to say. But I would also like to comment on the incorporation. If we had the revenue to take on all of those services, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now on the deficit in our general fund.
It appears as if General Manager McElhaney would like to respond.
I just wanted Vice President Dean to repeat that. I'm sorry.
If we had the sufficient revenue to go into incorporation the way it was just described by Mr. Fitzroy, we wouldn't be having this discussion because we would have the revenues to do what it is we need to do now and not having this discussion.
Director Dean.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can you just speak into your mic?
I'm sorry. Try for the third time.
It's okay, but we got some hot mics, especially with the two mics on at the same time. That's a possibility. I've met with Mr. Rob Fitzroy over incorporation and how high of a bar that is. And, you know, making the county revenue neutral is, it could be a large feat. We would see some of those tourism tax dollars, but, you know, in speaking with Mr. Fitzroy, it doesn't look like it would pencil out, especially for a small district like us. But again, we would have to do that study, the incorporation study, to really find out, which we discussed several times.
If I could just provide a little bit of context on the incorporation side of things, just a quick commentary to help put into context how difficult it is. Not to be discouraging, but that's just the reality. In the last about 14 or 15 years, there have only been about two or three incorporations throughout the state. So that gives you an indicator of how challenging that can be. I also always say that anybody can be a city if the community is willing to pay for it. So that's what it comes down to, is having enough community support and fees whatever it would cost.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzroy. I'll just say this once again with regard to length of time I've been here and the feedback I get from members of the community. I would say that most people that I know that I speak to, and of course that doesn't mean everybody, but I think the large majority of folks in our town, no matter what their, let's say, political persuasion is or income, whatever, or how long they live here throughout the year, most people would like Cambria to remain just the way it is, and incorporation would not be something that they would wish to pursue. That's just been my humble experience. Yes, Director Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Farmer, and thank you to Mr. Fitzroy for clarifying some of the challenges with incorporation. And I just wanted to add, because I don't think I heard you mention Public Works, and we would then be taking on the roads, and so that's just would be a rather huge liability that we would be incurring, which plays to the point that Vice President Dean brought up. Yeah. If we had those kind of revenues, we wouldn't be in this problem, and that potential, I doesn't pencil out. Well put.
All right, moving on. I just want to say I think it'd be far more expensive to be an incorporated city than the issues that we're facing as a CCSD, as a CSD at this time. So moving on, so Mr. Fitzroy, thank you so much. And I'm a little bit, confused right now, but I'm wondering how do we continue to pursue regular business item A, and at what point do we move on to item 3B? All right. So let's go on to item 3B, and once again, General Manager McElhaney, if you would introduce this item.
Thank you, President Farmer. Agenda item 3B, discussion and consideration regarding the financial condition of the general fund and structural funding analysis and adoption of resolution 15-2026, establishing a policy to prioritize general fund revenues for core health, safety, and essential service obligations, and to limit discretionary non-essential capital expenditures. So we've covered quite a bit of this already, but I'll continue. The general fund has experienced an average annual structural imbalance over the past 5-year audited period, as noted in the MSR. Continued reliance on existing revenue sources without adjustment will result in ongoing pressure on the general fund reserves and may require future service level reductions. You know, we're a multi-service community service district responsible for providing water, wastewater, fire protection, solid waste, street lighting, parks, rec, and open space to the community of Cambria. The Municipal Service Review identified that the district's general fund expenditures have exceeded revenues over the evaluated period. Our net position has decreased, and we, as we know, we're struggling just to maintain our existing commitments as applies to park, rec, and open space. We continue to manage the Fiscalini Ranch, 198 open space parcels. In the past, we have taken ownership of additional open space parcels, which we've pretty much stopped over the last couple years. Our general fund budgets for fire, facilities and resources, and administration will continue to decline, impacting operations and safety. The maintenance of our community asset and services that include the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve and open space parcels include public restroom facilities, two of them, now three, and soon to be four. We have homeless encampment cleanups. We're subsidizing utility and solid waste collection and disposal services for lower income individuals and families. And these provide a significant benefit to the community, but are not supported by dedicated revenue sources. Additionally, there is Supreme Court cases that are looking at franchise fees. The district receives $260,000 of franchise fees each year, which supports our general fund. And there's a high likelihood that that can go away, and that would be crippling for our district. So we are facing some real financial challenges from the general fund side. The MSR confirms that parks, rec, and open space are to be provided within available funding, and explicitly warns that expanding parks, recreation, and open space responsibilities, principally ongoing maintenance costs without additional funding, will impact negatively our core services of public and safety. This resolution is not saying that we are not for parks, rec, and open space, but I believe bringing it before the board and adopting this resolution will provide a path forward for us to look at expanding parks, recs, and open space once we've identified that funding source. And I know the board has discussed 501c3s and foundations and community fundraising, or if the board would like to discuss moving forward some sort of a parcel tax for parks, rec, and open space that could address the funding. But we have not addressed those funding issues. And from a staff level perspective, and I've had several conversations with the board, we're looking to establish this initial stopgap policy to create a path forward that is clear and understood for not only the board and staff, but for the public on how we can move these park and rec opportunities forward. Just unfortunately, based on our revenues, it can't be moved forward on the back of the general fund. And so with that, I'll turn it over to the board for discussion.
All right, thank you. Uh, Thank you, General Manager McElhaney. I just want to ask you before I open this to board discussion, you just mentioned a parcel tax for parks, recreation, and open space. Could you elaborate on that just a little bit?
Absolutely. It was discussed by Mr. Fitzroy in terms of a Prop 218 or a fee. A parcel tax could be brought before this board, essentially do a study and some polling, and then if there's significant community support for it, it could be put on the ballot for our community members to basically vote to tax themselves to create that revenue stream that could support our existing park, rec, and open space and expand it to include the community park and things of that nature.
All right, thank you very much. So what I'd like to do right now, obviously, is open this for board discussion, but I think I'd like to call on, and I hope he doesn't mind me just kind of dropping it on him, the chair of the Parks and Recreation and Open Space Committee, Director Thomas, to get your feedback on this.
Yeah, fair enough. Thank you, President Farmer, and thank you, General Manager McElhaney. This is one of the toughest challenges we have, there's no question. I think we can look back at the record of this board. This board consistently and always prioritizes fire safety, fire protection over discretionary parks and recreation. And I truly applaud the effort and the discipline of the general manager and staff, as well as the board. Each of the parks and recreation efforts we've undergone over the last 3 years, we have explicitly required community funding for the investment as well as for the maintenance. I think these are truly consistent with what Mr. Fitzroy has been describing as not taking on additional responsibilities without adequate funding sources. So this board has exhibited that discipline. Now, bringing this resolution to the board, this essentially limits the discretion, limits the authority of this board of directors. We already have a budget policy that establishes the process for how we establish budgets, how we prioritize. Clear, well-written policy. If we need to update the that policy with the process and procedures, so be it. But establishing a resolution prohibiting further expenditures in one area or another essentially is reducing the authority of this board of directors. And to me, I don't welcome that reduction of the authority of the board in terms of representing the community. And because there's no reason this board will I think deviate from viewing fire protection as the more critical priority, but that should remain within the board's purview and not be dictated by resolution. My initial thoughts.
Can I follow up with that, Director Thomas? Those are valid points, and I think, again, to my initial comment was trying to provide a clear message to the community on that, and that's part of this resolution is saying that we have to look at those outside funding sources. But looking at the resolution, there's specific language that actually allows the board of directors to retain that authority in terms of some of the purpose of the resolution. When we talk about adequately funded, shall mean at a minimum annual operating and maintenance costs for core services are fully funded in the adopted budget. Reasonable contingency and emergency reserves are maintained at or above board adopted reserve targets. Deferred maintenance and known capital needs for essential facilities and fire life safety infrastructure are addressed through funded plans, and project general fund revenues are sufficient to sustain above obligations over a multi-year planning horizon without reliance on one-time or uncertain revenue sources. And the last line, or the next line that is, any determination that all core services are adequately funded and that disposable general fund surplus exists shall be made by the board of directors in a public meeting, supported by substantial evidence, financial analysis presented by staff, and documented in the record. So I believe the authority through this resolution still allows you to make those decisions and doesn't necessarily hamstring the board, but I respect your opinion.
Director Scott.
Yes, thank you, President Farmer. I have a question for our general counsel, please. And that question is, what's the difference between a resolution and a policy?
It's a fine one, because policies are normally established by resolution.
Oh.
Sorry. And I did want to note that, you know, resolutions aren't permanent. When a board wants to change a resolution, it can do so at any time. It can modify it. It can rescind it. It's a statement at the point in time you're making and adopting the resolution. But as facts change, the resolution can be changed on essentially 24 hours notice. So this is nothing permanent. I did want to note there's huge flexibility in resolutions and in policy changing. As you find the policy isn't working, you modify it.
Thank you. I have one more one more question, and that is for the board members to speak to some of the questions that we've had from the public about the length of time that people have had to take a look at this information prior to our making a decision. So I would like to hear from other board members about that.
Thank you, Director Scott. I don't know what, Director Gray, you turned your, all right.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah.
Director Gray, go right ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, I could talk about that a little bit, because I think we've been discussing this issue for a long time, the idea of priorities. I think there was a comment made by one of the public speakers that we're deciding today whether to get rid of our Parks and Recreation authority, and we're not. And it's actually explicit in here that we're not, basically getting out of the Parks and Recreation business entirely. And as our council said, we're not tying our hands or tying the hands of any future board. It's more a reminder to any future board that this situation in the budget is crucial to observe and to maybe stay within the lanes on the guardrails. I like the thing I think is most important actually to me in that list of purposes of the resolution in terms of adequately funded is C, which is deferred maintenance and known capital needs for essential facilities and fire life safety infrastructure addressed through funded plans. In other words, we have assurance, we have a plan that goes, into the future, beyond this current board, beyond this current election, for keeping things up and replacing things that need to be replaced. We don't have that really yet. We're working on it. It's a big project, like a 10-year plan. And if we don't, if future boards and our own board don't have this policy in hand, basically telling them, reminding them all the time what the issues are, they'll be tempted to make short-term decisions. Say, okay, we don't need this new fire, the fire station repaired this year or the next year, maybe 3 years from now. We'll be a little bit looser with money for maintenance of the park and restrooms and things like that. That kind of short-term thinking, taking the easy way out essentially, is what this resolution I think tries to prevent. But as council said, it can always be changed. No higher authority is making us do this, follow this. But I think it's a really useful reminder to us as we go forward what the context is for all of these budgetary decisions we make. And I do think it's also something that could make the budget process a little more, a little deeper as we consider, preparing budgets to have this policy in hand as the budgets are prepared for us, and so we can be sure that the budgets themselves kind of follow these standards of the resolution. So I think it's a good, it exists, it basically reflects the discipline we're already trying to follow. and it just keeps us on track.
Thank you, Director Gray. Vice President Dean.
I agree with what Director Gray has just said, and I think this does establish what our priorities are and sets a policy that we need to make sure that our core services are funded first before we do any other discretionary spending. I don't think this hamstrings us at all because it does say that once all our core services are adequately funded and we have disposable general fund surplus, we can go ahead and discuss parks and recreation development. So I don't think it hamstrings us at all. And also, it sets on the record what our discipline is money-wise and kind of removes any doubt that we're gonna just abandon this and go for this. I mean, it just sets our priorities. And I think it's good to have this policy in place. We know that there's an election coming at the end of the year and some boards are gonna change, some board members are gonna change, hopefully not all. But I think this just needs to be put on the record for both the board members, the staff, and the public. And so I think it's a well-written resolution and I agree with it.
All right, thank you, Vice President Dean. I'm just going to make this comment that I think with regard to the board, with regard to staff, addressing the need, financial need for core services is already something that that's how we operate. The fact that we're having to do this resolution to kind of define what we're already doing and perhaps therefore limiting how much monies we're going to spend on non-essential items, I'm not so sure this was even all that necessary. That's just my humble opinion. But I would say that, and I appreciate what everyone else has said with regard to addressing all the various items that have to do with this particular agenda item. But having heard from a number of community members and let's say board members as well, with regard to perhaps we're moving a little too quickly on this item. We only had members of the public only had, let's say, 24 hours to look at this agenda item. I know that some board members might say, well, yes, but this has been an item of discussion off and on, even if not an agenda item, for months now. But I tend to always want to hear what community members have to say because they elected us and their opinions are usually valid and need to be tended to. So my concern would be perhaps not voting for this, but allowing it for, let's say, further discussion at another point when more members of the community can come and address this issue of how we fund non-essential issues such as parks, recreation, and open space versus priority funding. So I don't know how anyone feels about that. Anyone wish to comment on what I just said?
Yeah.
General Manager McElhaney.
Thank you, President Farmer. I just want to clarify, you know, this was a special meeting, but there were several loose ends that the district was trying to tie up when it came to the resolution, to Mr. Fitzroy's presentation, how the resolution and his presentation aligned. That's why it ended up getting posted, you know, 24 hours ahead of time. There were several things that district council and myself and staff were working on to finalize this. So it wasn't on purpose. It wasn't to limit public participation. And I've been speaking with the directors about this resolution and staff report for some time. It just took quite a bit of coordination because, you know, from a staff level, and Mr. Carmel thought it was an important resolution to get right. And so we did take our time with it.
Okay, so let me just say this. Since perhaps maybe some members of the community are a little bit skeptical or suspicious, might be too strong a word, with regard to this item coming up, this agenda coming up with just 24 hours notice. Since that's how things proceeded, perhaps we could have done this a week later and giving the public more opportunity to see this item, as well as giving the board members more of an opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, President Farmer. Again, we thought it was an important isolated discussion that needs to be, that needs to happen. We've brought this type of discussion before the board during board meetings, and it just didn't seem to progress. And again, we have several parks projects that could come be coming before us, and we thought timing-wise it was important. Additionally, we just started doing our final budgets for the new fiscal year, and there were some hard conversations we had to have with the general fund. With the Safer Firefighters that this board approved, which is, I'll just take a $327,000-ish was gonna be coming out of general fund reserves over the next 3 years, that already started putting our fire department in a deficit. So we had to cut the fire department's budget pretty lean just to balance that out. We had to add in revenues for the expected out-of-county assignments. So, you know, we're already looking potentially at a structural deficit. And so these conversations, the resolution, I think is important to staff, and again, the messaging to some of the public in terms of, you know, what we can and can't do as a district. And from a staff level, we just don't think that message has been clear or solidified by resolution. And again, the board does not have to adopt this resolution. This is a suggestion from district council and staff on that messaging. And I understand that the special meeting is short notice, but again, we do think it's a high priority considering some of the things we're gonna be facing over the next couple months.
All right, thank you, General Manager McElhaney. We have two directors that wish to speak. I believe Director Thomas was first.
Yeah, thank you, President Farmer, and to Director Scott's question. It is notable that, I was working out on the preserve yesterday morning, and my phone dinged, and I looked down, and it was 9:55 or 9:57 when I, you know, got the information about, you know, the reading package for today's meeting. And I thought, well, there are going to be a lot of members of the public, members of our community that feel and perceive exactly what Mr. Townsend pointed out. So that's of great concern to me, which would support what President Farmer suggests of not voting at this time. A couple of comments by my fellow directors that, well, there are going to be elections coming up in November, and inferring we can't trust who the public elects upcoming, so we need to establish this now. Fire protection is now, has always been, and will always be on top of mind for any member of this, you know, board, and anyone who is there's no one that this community is going to elect that doesn't have that as a priority. And as such, I would challenge that rationale for adopting this this resolution. And again, we have a budget policy which provides the avenue for directors and staff to interact on establishing priorities, which is adequate. And this. You know, the resolution is not necessary. And the other point, I guess, the concept of item 4 in the resolution, adequately funded. I can't imagine a world in which our general manager and fire chief will sit back and say, yes, yeah, we've got everything we need for fire protection. We'll always be challenged. There's no world in the future where we won't be challenged to some extent. That bar is quite likely to, in practice, be unachievable.
All right, thank you, Director Thomas. I know Director Scott has her light on, but I believe Vice President Dean wanted to respond to something that Director Thomas just stated.
I totally take offense at the suggestion that I would think the public would elect somebody that we do not trust. That was not what I meant at all, and I just want to make that clear. We have been discussed our lack of funds for parks and recreation and our need to prioritize core services for quite some time. I think this resolution is important to solidify that and to prioritize our priorities to fund our core services and our fire department, who we count on for this entire community's safety.
before we start talking about spending money that we don't have on things that are not a high priority. So I do approve that. I do support this resolution. And like I said, I do take offense to the comment that I think we might be electing directors that may not be trustworthy.
Well, that happened in the past. I don't think it exists now. Just my humble observation. Yes, Director Scott.
Yes, thank you, President Farmer. I need to make several points. The first point being, I am the chair of the Finance Committee, and we are in May going to be looking at the next year budget. So this is helpful to have a resolution that can guide us to do that. Number two, during strategic planning, I was very clear about my opinion about funding things that are not a priority for this district. So it would be really weird for me to not vote for this resolution because basically it says what I believe. So I do have some question about the timing, but I'll tell you what, I have read this report by LAFCO many times. In fact, I read it when it first came out, and I've read it again and again because I think it's really important for us to have an objective view of someone who is writing a report about our district. I think that this has been something that has been talked about a lot. It has never been on an agenda specifically like this. So that's where I'm wavering. But it does state exactly what I believe in this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Scott. Director Gray.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion. Thanks to Director Scott, because she said, I'm chair of the fire committee, and what Mr. McElhenney was saying about the state of the budget in the fire department is maybe even sugarcoating it a little bit from what we know. It has a lot of costs coming up, and this is just a nice reminder. This resolution is a nice reminder to stay on track, you know, and not get fuzzy about, you know, what we need to spend on and what we don't. So, having said that, I will say I move that this board adopt Resolution 152026, establishing a policy to prioritize general fund revenues for core health, safety, and essential service obligations, and to limit discretionary non-essential capital expenditures.
I'll second the motion.
All right, Ms. Dotson, we have a motion and a second. A roll call, please.
Director Gray?
Aye.
Vice President Dean?
Aye.
Director Thomas?
Nay, but only because I think it's unnecessary.
Director Scott?
Aye.
Can you turn on your mic?
Aye.
Thank you. President Farmer?
Only because, for two reasons. I wish to concur with Director Thomas, but also the fact that people that I highly respect and regard in this community feel as if we didn't have enough time to address this and for public comment as well. So my vote is no. So are you going to tell us that the vote was 3-2 in favor of this item?
I usually don't, but it was.
Oh, you don't? Oh, okay, for some reason. All right, so any members of the board have anything further to say on this item? I'm looking out there in the audience. Probably not called for me to ask for public comment on what happened today. You can always come back next month. So I guess I'll adjourn the meeting in case someone else has something to say. All right, thank you, board. And thank you, Mr. Fitzroy. I really, we appreciate your feedback. And And your ability, like I said earlier, to not only provide, you know, very pertinent information, but to respond to all of our concerns. So thank you so much. And have a pleasant drive home.